ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When you want to be stopped in your tracks.
I'm running to shoot it. It's 50-50. You can catch his gun or he shoot you.
When you want to know the truth.
She was brainwashing her from the start.
We're here to investigate.
Something's gone wrong. Big time.
Search Background Briefing Podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
All part of the usual process of consultation and listening to feedback, or a humiliating backdown after a rushed budget. On Thursday, the Prime Minister and Treasurer announced a raft of changes to the measures they unveiled 5 weeks ago on budget night. After 5 weeks of criticism, more small businesses will now be given exemptions. Concessions are being worked on for startups. The Treasurer's discretionary powers will be limited, and discretionary testamentary trusts will be spared from the new 30% minimum tax, which was labelled a death tax by the opposition. There's a huge amount on the line here for Labor politically. This budget has already been marked down in the polls for the broken promise element. The risk now is it's also remembered as a chaotic attempt at reform that required patch-ups rather than a considered effort to deliver important change. Either way, Labor wants these changes passed through the Parliament in the next 2 weeks. It needs the support of the Greens and is confident it will get it. And so, ahead of this critical sitting fortnight, I'm keen to take a closer look at where the government has landed on this policy. What will it mean for business? I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Andrew McKellar is the Chief Executive of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, which represents business big and small. Welcome.
Great, David. Good to be here.
So, look, you've been a critic of these changes from budget night. What do you think of where the government has now landed with these concessions?
Well, look, we're concerned that it is a patch-up at the end of the day. You know, the original policy as it announced really was very detrimental to business. You are not going to get increased business investment in this country if you put more tax on it. And even with the changes that the government has announced, there's still going to be higher tax on a lot of investment that's covered currently by the capital gains tax. So we really don't think that, you know, the things that they've tried to change yesterday are going to make a sufficient difference. You cannot ameliorate you know, what's been done by just trying to limit the damage.
But there will be a change now for those businesses with a turnover up to $10 million. Will those businesses actually be worse off or better off or no difference?
Well, look, it'll ameliorate some of the damage that would otherwise have occurred as a result of what was announced in the budget.
But will this mean that they're worse than they are under the existing law for capital gains tax?
Well, what it means is still for the majority of businesses, certainly for the majority of business investment, there's still going to be a higher tax burden. So,
but I'm asking specifically about those businesses up to $10 million where the government's made some change.
Oh, look, that's improved the situation for them.
Is it better or worse? Is it better or worse than the existing capital gains tax rules for them?
Oh, look, it will depend on a case by case basis, and of course, it's got to be put alongside, you know, the other measures that have been announced in the budget.
So things like the $20,000 instant asset write-off being made permanent, the loss carryback also being returned permanently, the R&D changes. Is it possible some businesses will be better off?
Oh, look, I think at the lower end, it's entirely possible that some businesses will benefit, but for the majority. And I think the test of this is, you know, if you listen to what the Treasurer said in announcing these changes, 1/17 of the revenue is being returned back into the system here, 16/17. So you know, between 5% and 6% of the revenue is foregone now. They're keeping, you know, more than 95%.
But also, if you listen to the Treasurer, he says 98% of Australian businesses will now have these more generous rules.
Yeah.
So for those businesses, this is what I'm trying to get to. Are they going to be better off than they are under the existing capital gains tax scheme when you include the budget as a whole, including those instant asset write-offs, will they be better off?
Well, I think this is playing with statistics. 2.7 million small businesses. Of course, the majority of those are sole traders. Mm. When you look across the whole spectrum of business and where the impact of this will be in terms of shifting the needle on business investment, this is still going to be a net negative for the Australian economy. Okay. And I mean, that's the reality.
But for the sole traders and the smallest operators, they could be better off.
Well, some of them will. And in fact, a lot of those are not paying a lot of tax in the first place, and they're not paying a lot of capital gains tax in the first place. So I really don't think that goes to solving the fundamental heart of the problem that we had with this issue in the first place.
So your membership would be those bigger than sole traders. You represent small business, medium size, and big business. For your membership, you're concerned this is still going to cost them.
Well, we represent business across the whole spectrum. So it's, small business, medium-sized business and larger businesses. But of course, a key part of our constituency is businesses that employ people. For that's above a sole trader. So, when we get to the heart of this, the net impact across the economy, it can't be positive. It is resulting in a higher level of overall taxation on business investment. That's not going to boost business investment. It's not going to boost productivity. And that's the heart of the problem here. It really is, a dead weight on ambition and incentive in the economy. That's the fundamental issue.
Now, obviously, your organisation represents business. You're never going to support something that sees business pay more tax. But again, the Treasurer says, at least in the first 4 years, all of it's being returned in a tax cut through the Working Australians Tax Offset plus these business measures that we mentioned. Do you think a lot of Australians might feel that this is something worthwhile for them?
Well, I'm not sure that that's the case. So if you look at the totality of this, out over the longer term, the Treasurer has said that, if you take the negative gearing and capital gains tax measures together, even with the other things that are on the other side of that, it's a net revenue increase of about $40 billion. Of course, then we have the changes to trust arrangements, which really at this stage haven't been fully scrutinised. And I think that's a whole new can of worms. So when we get into that level of detail, that's another $40 billion. So, there's a huge, revenue hit that's coming through into the economy.
So
and
there'll be
business has got to absorb that.
Yeah, on the trusts, they're not legislating that, I think, till later in this year.
Yeah.
There'll be another fight over that.
Well, look, I think, that's a whole new level. I mean, I think it'll make capital gains tax potentially look like a Sunday school picnic. It's something that really goes to the heart of the way many businesses, family and small businesses, are structured in Australia. So if you think about every small to medium home builder in Australia, almost every pharmacy in Australia, news agents, cafes, every Greek cafe or restaurant in Melbourne, they're probably structured through some sort of discretionary or family trust. So, the level of complication for those businesses to have to think about restructuring in the future, really there's going to be a lot of work that has to be done to address that.
You think the government might have to back down on trusts later this year as well?
Well, I don't know, but it's certainly going to be a very complicated issue.
Okay.
The impact on restructuring is going to be a major point that has to be dealt with. And I understand that the government will be bringing forward another consultation paper on that topic. Obviously, we await to see the detail of that.
I want to ask you about consultation because the Treasurer has talked a lot about there was consultation before the budget, and then since the budget in the last 5 weeks, there's been a lot of consultation, and this is all just part of listening to that feedback. What's the consultation been like? How would you describe it?
Oh, look, I wouldn't say that this has been a model process by any stretch of the imagination. I think, obviously, we understand that in the formation of a budget, there are limitations on how far government will go as they're considering options and making decisions. So that's taken. But I think really, in terms of a model process for tax reform, this has been very piecemeal. And the level of consultation isn't where I would have expected it to be. Really, we would expect that there would be a process where a full set of options would be tabled, would be brought forward. Potentially, this is where the Productivity Commission could have played a role. We didn't see that happening. Instead, we've kind of seen dribs and drabs leaked out in the budget process. We've seen the announcement on budget night. We've seen the impact that that's had. And now, of course, we've seen the reversals and changes that have come out of that. So I think where this kind of ends up is this is starting to look a little bit like, you know, one of those American celebrities who's had a bit too much plastic surgery. And it ends up, you know, they might think it looks beautiful, but to everybody else, it's just a freak show.
Okay. Well, I assume you see, are you saying this is a freak show of a tax reform?
Well, it's far from beautiful.
Okay.
It's far from beautiful.
And you're clearly not happy with the consultation process. Do you trust Jim Chalmers?
Oh, look, you know, of course, we trust the Treasurer. We seek to take him at his word. At the end of the day, you know, we make a judgment about the policies that government announces. We don't agree with the thrust of those policies. We would have liked to have seen a much more comprehensive approach to tax reform here. And if I go back to the economic reform roundtable last year, you know, that's what business was pushing for in that context. We thought that there was a fair hearing in that process. You know, there were a couple of issues that were identified, the intergenerational equity pieces, but also the need for stronger encouragement of business investment. Now, nobody that went through that process, me included, would have expected that the outcome of a discussion around the need to encourage stronger business investment would be higher tax on business investment.
So in hindsight, do you feel that was a stitch-up, that roundtable?
I wouldn't say a stitch-up, but I would say that I think where we are now is not consistent with what I would have expected would have come out of that process.
Look, I want to ask you about something else while we've got you. One Nation has rocketed ahead in the polls. This week, we heard Pauline Hanson at the National Press Club calling for an overhaul of industrial relations. It's something Liberals have been a bit afraid of talking about much for some time. Pauline Hanson says businesses tell her that it's too difficult to sack people these days. They're on their phones, they don't work, they don't turn up, they're actually lazy. Is that what business thinks?
Look, I mean, business has a lot of thoughts about industrial relations, and it's a topic that we're not afraid to talk about.
So do you feel that way about business, about workers, that they're on their phones, they don't work, they don't turn up, they're lazy, they're too difficult to sack?
No, that's not how we feel about workers. What we do feel is that there needs to be, again, stronger incentive in the system, less regulation. If we look at the changes that have been made to our industrial relations system over the past 4 years, they've piled on regulation after regulation. They've made it harder for business, particularly small and medium-sized business, to take on a range of employees with confidence, so particularly in areas like casual employment and other areas. They've put into place new restrictions, new offences. They've criminalised a so-called wage underpayment. They've made it much harder for business. And I think, it's a shame, but, at the end of the day, that's what's been supported through the Senate and through the Parliament.
I understand all that, but to be clear, when Pauline Hanson says it's too difficult to sack workers and that business reckon workers are too lazy, you're saying that's not what business thinks?
What we're saying is it needs to be easier for business to create jobs and to employ more Australians.
But not easier to sack workers.
Look, of course, we think there should be more flexibility. So when you need to make changes, you can make the changes. But equally, you've got to have in place a system which encourages business to take the chance to create jobs, to employ more Australians. That's the only way we're going to grow the economy and grow the pie. It's not about how do we shrink the economy. Mm. Of course, we need to have the flexibility to make changes when we need to make changes. So those sorts of areas have gone too far. Mm. And that I think is where we would put the emphasis.
And a final one, Pauline Hanson also once again railed against the net zero target. Mm. Do you still support the net zero target?
Well, we do support a goal of net zero. I think what the legitimate question here is, do we have all of the variables in play to get the energy solutions that we need and to ensure that we've got that at the most affordable rate that we can?
But should I read anything into your use of the word goal there rather than target?
Well, I think they're aligned. I think clearly, are we on track at the moment? Will we need to accelerate substantially? I think these are questions that business will continue to look at. I don't think we should walk away from the Paris Agreement framework But we have to have the full set of options at our disposal. And, you know, as I have been recently meeting with counterparts in other parts of the world, you know, they look at the solutions that we're adopting in Australia and they say, gee, that's surprising. They seem to be incredibly restricted. You're putting an emphasis almost entirely on renewable energy. What about the other options?
And I appreciate you'd like more options on the table.
We would.
But you still support the net zero by 2050 target?
Oh, look, I think net zero as a goal is something that business stands by.
Okay,
but can we achieve it by 2050
just
or not?
Just to be very clear, yep. So you know, listeners are confused. Mm. Do you support net zero by 2050 target?
We do. We do support that target. You know, can we get there? Will we need to change policies to give it a real shot? We think that those things have got to be on the table.
Andrew McKellar, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, David.
All right. And look, if you'd like to hear more on what we've been discussing, this budget back down, join us for Insiders Sunday morning on ABC TV. PK will be back in the podcast feed on Monday and we'll be back at the end of the week. See you then.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.